Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And what you just heard has been the story, the shockwaves around the NFL for the last 24 hours. And Chris, as we will get into some of the words from Brian Flores himself, the now former head coach at the center of these allegations, the center of the lawsuit, who was on Get Up this morning, who was across a number of networks, getting out here and speaking his piece. Chris, it's been interesting to watch the varied levels of reaction around the last 24 hours to this, because while we've got what appears to be concrete evidence of something that's long been thought of for the first time, the general sentiment that I've seen from a lot of people has been, well, yeah, of course this has been going on. Where have y'all been?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, Gojo, I want to give credit to Brian Flores for not hiding behind his legal team and being willing to go on these various shows on various media outlets and be able to tell his side of the story and express how upset he was, how frustrated he was when he got wind of the fact that the Giants had already made their decision on who they wanted to hire as the head coach days before he was set to do his final interview with them. So credit to him for doing that. It could have been easy for him to hide behind the legal team. He didn't do that. He put a face on it. He stood behind the allegations that he spelled out in the class action lawsuit, and now it's a matter of the legal process running its due course. But the one thing that he brought up that I think is telling, and I think it deserves to be repeated, is that he didn't need to file a lawsuit in order to get other people to realize that the NFL has a problem when it comes to hiring black coaches. He didn't need the lawsuit for that. He filed the lawsuit so that it could stimulate change. It could be the catalyst in order for the NFL to move in a direction that it has already proven itself incapable of being able to do it on its own. So I think that's the important thing to keep in perspective as we go through the days and the months ahead, trying to figure out what's to come from this lawsuit. But I got to give Brian Flores credit because he seemingly sacrificed his head coaching career in the National Football League. Keep it in mind that there are five other vacancies that are yet to be filled. He was a candidate in several of those other jobs, and yet he decided that he was going to file this lawsuit regardless of what the outcome would be with the interview process with those respective gigs. So I got to give credit where credit is due. It would have been easy for him to shut up and to try to get one of those jobs. We know that he was going to be a head coach again in this league at some point. If it wasn't this hiring cycle, it would have been next year's hiring cycle just based on the job that he did with the Miami Dolphins. But he tabled all of that for something that he deems in the interest of the greater good. And so I got to give him all the credit in the world for being able to do that, regardless of the outcome of this.
Yeah, this was Brian Flores, the former Dolphins head coach, this morning on Get Up, talking about just what you said there, the text messages being a confirmation of something that many people already knew.
I think those text messages confirmed a lot of what a lot of us, you know, black minority coaches already feel, that a lot of we're going into these and they're shams. It confirmed that a lot of there's a belief and you know, look, that was just a mistake by Belichick. We've all sent the wrong text message to somebody. Mm-hmm. But in this instance, it came to me and it was almost, you know, it was confirmation that those backroom dealings were happening.
Yeah, Chris, what you just mentioned, I think, bears repeating. Brian Flores was going to get another one of these jobs. Like, he wasn't someone that was going to get shut out of this process. And I saw Bomani Jones talking with the guys over in the Lebatard show today. And this part stuck out to me because all of this happened very quickly, too. These interviews were going on in the last few weeks here. This has to come from a place of such genuine hurt to get here, knowing everything Brian Flores had on the line. Because like he said, while everyone knows it and we've heard from black coaches across the National Football League, we've heard about conversations that they have behind closed doors about feeling this way, there's got to be something just so guttural about seeing it spelled out in plain text, seeing your livelihood, something that you believed as Brian Flores, a guy who, you know, heard him talking about it this morning, grew up tough in New York City, had to battle through a lot, is a first-generation American, he's a child of immigrants, immigrants that came over here and believed that football and the meritocracy of the sport that we're all sold as people that play that game at any level was going to be his way towards better. Talked about everything football did for him and got to the highest level of achievement in the sport that he loved so much, and then saw the way that his livelihood and his future was treated by other people. I can't imagine the hurt that's there. And the more and more I sit around with this, Chris, that's what it's got to be about, because to go and lose the opportunity before him has to come from a place of understanding and just not wanting to be a part of something that can make him feel that way.
Well, Mike, you saw the hurt on his face when he did that sit-down interview this morning with Nate Burleson, and he said 18 years in the National Football League to fight to get to the opportunity to be a head coach, and only to have your owner undermine you with the potential allegations of being offered $100,000 for every loss in his rookie season as a head coach in order to tank for draft position. And fast forward 3 years from that, to be undermined in the interview process, to find out that the New York Giants had already made their decision on who their next head coach would be, it's got to be frustrating. And you saw in his face that he was humiliated, and he said as much. And so I think that speaks to a larger issue when you start talking about the Rooney Rule and its effectiveness, and it's clear that it isn't a fair and equitable process when it comes to hiring black coaches in comparison to their white counterparts. And all these coaches are asking is for black coaches to get consideration, to get job opportunities and representative numbers in a league that's 73% black when you come to the workforce, when it comes to the players. And that's the part that doesn't make sense. It's not as if you don't have qualified black coaches that are out there that have the potential to rise through the ranks, to become coordinators, and to have an opportunity to interview and be effective head coaches. They're just lobbying for the opportunity. And that's what Brian Flores is trying to do. He's trying to pry that door open, a door that's seemingly been cracked, but it's been shut on so many black candidates that are seemingly worthy of the opportunity. Look at Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City. I mean, Demario Davis talked about it in an interview that he did today. That might be the most egregious example that we've seen over the course of the past decade of somebody that has proven themselves to be qualified, not having an opportunity to be a head coach in the National Football League. You look at his predecessors, the offensive coordinators for the Kansas City Chiefs. Matt Nagy had a job. After 1 year of being the coordinator, he got to take over the Chicago Bears. Doug Peterson, before that, after 3 years of being the coordinator with the Chiefs, got a chance to be the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Eric Bieniemy has been on the job for 4 years as the offensive coordinator. Now, I get it. It's Andy Reid's offense, but it was Andy Reid's offense under Doug Peterson and Matt Nagy, and those guys were good enough to get jobs. And now we hear excuses being floated why Bieniemy doesn't get a job. Well, it's because he doesn't interview well. It's because he doesn't have the people skills. He's not collaborative enough. Whatever the excuse may be, the man has proven himself to be qualified, and yet he doesn't get an opportunity. Meanwhile, you have somebody like Cliff Kingsbury, who failed as a college coach at Texas Tech, was hired as an offensive coordinator at USC, and then ended up in the same offseason getting a head coaching job of the Arizona Cardinals. This after the Cardinals decided to fire Steve Wilks, a black head coach, after 1 year with a rookie quarterback. So you show me where the equity is in the process of black coaches being able to become head coaches in the National Football League.
Not a lot of it to be found here. That's the difficulty and the feelings in the center of all of this. And the difficult question coming next is, what happens? What can be actionable coming off of this? Brian Flores said that part of what he wanted here was to change hearts and minds, to get people inside this hiring process in the NFL to think differently. What's it going to take to get to that point? Coming up in about 30 seconds, we'll talk to Amber Wilson, who you guys have heard around here as a host on ESPN Radio, and who also is a lawyer, someone that can help us focus in on what things are going to be important in this legal process to try and make what Brian Flores is talking about a reality for the coaches that come after him. We'll do that in 30 seconds after this word from Indeed. Guys, finding talent can leave you feeling like someone feeling like you need some hidden talent to get it all done. There we go. Don't fret. That's why there's Indeed. Just sponsor a job and they'll search through millions of resumes on their site to show you candidates that fit your job description. When you find a candidate you'd like to speak with, Indeed's all-in-one hiring platform helps you schedule virtual interviews and connect with applicants right from your employer dashboard. Hiring's never been more streamlined and simple. To learn more, visit Indeed.com/credit. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. And it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. For more on what's next, with Brian Flores and the class action lawsuit against the NFL and three of its teams, we head to the hotline to talk to Amber Wilson, lawyer and ESPN radio host. And Amber, we appreciate you letting us tap into that former title in here, because I know you have actually gone through and read through the filing in this class action lawsuit. I know we've heard a lot of the headlines, but what stood out most to you about what Brian Flores is trying to get done here?
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me. Well, first of all, I think that it's important to note that in these 60 pages, about probably the first 20 pages, frankly, are laid out more like a history lesson. And listen, none of us needed a lawsuit to tell us about the issues that the NFL has in terms of diversity with coaching staffs and with front offices. It's well documented. It's certainly been well documented in NFL history. Nevertheless, Flores' team did a really good job of kind of laying it all out, painting the picture. There was some effective strategies in here with putting the pictures of the coaches and the pictures of the front office execs. And you can see it's glaring and obvious, the lack of diversity, where, of course, we're talking about a league that is 70% Black and certainly has had its issues in the past with diversity. And I mentioned that 70% thing, by the way, because we always harp on that. But right now, in terms of coaching staffs, like, it's not even representative of the racial makeup of this country. Nevertheless, of course, the racial makeup of the league. So those issues have been there. They've been well documented. I frankly don't think any of that is bombshell in terms of this lawsuit, because we're all aware of that situation. But I do think that it was very well laid out. And the purpose of this, the way that it was laid out, the fact that this complaint starts with a quote from Martin Luther King, and it starts with a text from Bill Belichick that's highly unusual. I mean, I've actually never seen it. And it, particularly in federal court, where things tend to be very formal, like, that's a very unusual strategy. I mean, law professors would probably scoff at that, even though it's beautifully written. It's just a really unusual way to write a complaint. And I think that the reason that the lawyers framed this the way that they did is because they knew that we were going to be sitting here talking about it. And they knew that this was going to be consumed by the public. And they knew, of course, the media storm that would happen once this was filed. And that gets this conversation going, and it gets the public pressure on the NFL. So I kind of read this as not necessarily a lawsuit where Flores and his team truly believe that they're going to be able to take this all the way, because that's very rare anyways with civil suits. And I do think that there's a very tall mountain to climb here and many hoops to jump through before they would ever even get to a discovery phase, for example, where we would be able to prove this stuff. But the fact that they spent 60 pages kind of laying this out, I really think got it all out there for us in a manner where maybe the public pressure will finally be so great on the NFL that maybe Flores and his team will be able to affect change, even if it's not done by a judge, because frankly, that seems highly unlikely to me.
Yeah, Amber, and I saw on your Twitter account that you questioned whether or not this lawsuit would pass a motion to dismiss from the league side. But I wanted to ask you, as you dove into the lawsuit, what aspects of it seemed that they would be potentially actionable in a court of law?
Well, you know, this lawsuit, there's four actual causes of action here, and they all, as they relate to discrimination and the hiring practices with discrimination, two under New York law, one under federal law, and one under New Jersey as it pertains to the Giants. So that's really, this law school suit is just about discriminatory hiring practices with the NFL. And yet there are these other things thrown in there. And I only tuned into y'all, I only got a chance to tune in for a couple minutes yesterday. But Chris, I heard you say, because you were talking about some of the allegations there with Stephen Ross, and that's sort of like the bombshell one, this tanking allegation and maybe this pay for tanking allegation. And as sports fans, of course, that's the one we're going to latch on to and talk about. And frankly, I think that one might have real implications in terms of the NFL. But as it pertains to how it's related to this lawsuit or how it actually supports the claims herein, I don't even see how it's related, frankly, even though it's bombshell. So I heard when I tuned in to you for a couple minutes yesterday, you mentioned, let's not get so far off track here with focusing on the real issue at hand. And I do think that could be easy to do. The text from Bill Belichick, I mean, there's some salacious stuff in here that, frankly, I don't know if it actually does anything in terms of the actual causes of action. The actual causes of action, though, aren't just about Flores. So he's asserting that from his own individual perspective, he's being discriminated against with these sham interviews. And at one point, he alleges that maybe the Dolphins also, you know, fired him more quickly than they would have his white counterparts. But basically for him, it's the sham interviews, because obviously he is somebody who has gotten head coaching jobs in the NFL. But it's not just about Flores, because he's representing a class of persons. And so there is the implication there that in terms of the class, that there are many people, many black candidates that are qualified, that aren't even getting the coaching positions that they are qualified to get, in addition to things like sham interviews. Or if they get those positions, they're not given the time. You know, I think that those sorts of allegations, of course, have viability. And it's something that I think, like I said, we were all well aware of before we saw it in the form of this complaint.
Kane Angola Jr. talking to Amber Wilson on the hotline. Amber, you mentioned representing a class of people and a lot of this being about public pressure. How much of this argument would be strengthened if we saw backed up some of the claims his lawyers made on Get Up this morning, that there are other coaches they believe are ready to come forward with similar tangible evidence of instances where they believe they've been discriminated against?
Well, frankly, that's not necessary at this point. One of the reasons Chris mentioned there that I had tweeted about, you know, this is going to be hard to even get past a motion to dismiss. I do actually believe that. But then if it does get past a motion to dismiss, I think that you're going to have a very, very hard time, frankly, getting a court to certify this class. Because in order for it to be a class that gets certified, one of the things that you have to show is that this is a like a really large scale problem that's not individual, and that, you know, relates to such a large group of people that it's so numerous that in order to actually join all members of that class would be totally impractical. I think that might be a little bit difficult. And I don't know. Sure, certainly people wanting to join in to the suit and wanting to provide more proof and whatnot will be ultimately helpful if it goes down the line here. Right now, it's not necessary. And right now, the class hasn't even been certified. So we're certainly not even at that point yet. First thing that's going to happen is the NFL is going to file a motion to dismiss. In that motion to dismiss, they're going to argue that this shouldn't even be handled in a court of law, that this should be handled in arbitration under the CBA. I think that they're probably going to have a pretty strong argument, because at the heart of this, it's employment discrimination, and they're going to say anything as it pertains to employment is going to be handled under the CBA, and it's contractually obligated to be sent to arbitration. And arbitration wouldn't mean this goes away for the NFL. It would mean this goes away for us in terms of the media and in terms of us discussing it, because all of a sudden the doors would be closed, whereas obviously it stays in court. It would be public record. And then there's other arguments to be had that I can get into here that on its face. I mean, there's some other interesting arguments that I think that the NFL can make here in terms of the allegations herein to try to get this dismissed on its face, even assuming everything in it is true, which is what you have to do on a motion to dismiss. But then once we go beyond that, then they're going to go ahead and try to get this thrown out in terms of certifying the class as well. So like I said, many hoops to jump through here before we find out if any of this is frankly true or could be provable or anybody's deposed or there's any evidence. And I doubt that we're getting to that point. I don't know if we need to get to that point, though, frankly, because I think already this has been effective in terms of public pressure on the NFL.
And Amber, given the climate that we're in, the fallout that we saw from the Washington Commanders investigation with their workplace violations, and now the allegations that Brian Flores is making, from your perspective, what is the potential for a third-party agency to launch their own investigation that's independent of any entity that the NFL controls?
Well, it's funny because I do think some of these things are related. You mentioned the Washington thing. I mean, I think with Flores in his camp, he would love to get a hold of all those emails that John Gruden is his camp also would love to get a hold of now as it pertains to that Washington investigation. There's things like that that, of course, the NFL is going to be is notorious for trying to protect. And certainly we've seen it with some of these other issues like you mentioned. I do think, as I said earlier, that when it comes to the accusations against Stephen Ross, I don't really think that they have much meat in terms of the legal component of it. I do think from an NFL perspective, though, you're going to have to launch an investigation when you're talking about allegations of potentially tanking for play. That's going to have to result in some sort of investigation. Could like a independent body or a Congress end up getting involved? I mean, I think that, it's potential. All of that is potentially there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I would anticipate that being the case. I did notice on Get Up today, Flores implied that it was a conversation with Ross. And of course, if it's a conversation and then it comes down to he said, then that's going to be difficult in and of itself. But now with Hugh Jackson and what he's saying, you know, it gets interesting. Could this lead to more? Sure. I just not sure when it comes to this actual lawsuit. I mean, that even supporting this claim, I mean, that kind of seemed, frankly, from a legal perspective, that kind of doesn't even seem related to what these actual claims are. That seems like an inclusion in the lawsuit because you're kind of, you. I mean, he's trying to burn the house down. Flores in his camp. And I think in terms of us all discussing it and what may happen with an NFL investigation, he may be very successful in doing that on that front, but not necessarily particularly from this lawsuit because I'm not sure how related it is.
Certainly a ton of angles to consider as we look towards what's going to happen next. Amber Wilson, kind enough to help us lay some of that out here. Amber, thanks so much for all the information and all the help on this. I'm sure we will talk to you again very soon as this feels far from over.
Thanks, fam.
Amber Wilson joining us here, ESPN radio host and lawyer. That is Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Coming up next, let's take a look at how all of this, as Amber said, burning the house down the way Brian Flores and the legal team appear to be doing right now, affects some of the coaches who have taken jobs around these organizations named in the lawsuit. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty. A lot of great information from Amber Wilson, ESPN Radio host and lawyer who just joined us. If you missed any of that conversation, check it out on the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. And Chris, as we react to all that, so much of the last 24 hours has rightly been centered on Brian Flores and his perspective across a number of the issues presented in the class action lawsuit filed against the NFL, the New York Giants, the Miami Dolphins, and the Denver Broncos. What this might mean for someone like Jeffrey Ross, the owner for the Miami Dolphins, accused of paying Brian Flores, allegedly paying him to lose games down there in an effort to tank. But Chris, on the other side of this is also the New York Giants, in the middle of all this, do have a new head coach who was the one that Bill Belichick apparently meant to text congratulations to days before Brian Flores' interview for the job that was apparently already going to Brian Daboll. Like, how much does this change things for Brian Daboll and the Giants now and how they have to go about navigating the beginning of his tenure under this?
More pressure on Brian Daboll and on Joe Shane as well as John Mara to have early success, because this is a situation where you had a qualified candidate, a head coach that had back-to-back winning seasons with the Miami Dolphins with a rookie quarterback and Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think that's saying a lot about Brian Flores' football acumen. And so to choose to hire Brian Daboll before you actually even did the final interview with Brian Flores means that this head coach needs to be transformative in terms of what he's able to do early in his tenure with the New York Giants. This is a situation where the Giants just completed their fifth consecutive double-digit loss season, and seven of the last 8 years have been double-digit loss seasons. It's proven itself to be a dysfunctional franchise. They are tied for the worst record since 2017 in the NFL with the New York Jets. It's not exactly the territory that John Mara and Steve Tisch want to be in, and so the brain trust of Joe Shane and Brian Daboll has to pay early dividends in order to, A, justify the decision to choose Brian Daboll over somebody like Brian Flores, but also in the manner in which this all unfolded, the timeline, and actually bringing in Brian Daboll and deciding that you were going to hire him before you even did the final interview with Brian Flores.
Yeah, Chris, to me, this is going to feel like a lot more pressure on the front office. That's why I'll be interested, especially coming from ownership, where we've heard and seen it said that Joe Shane and this group are going to have the ability to evaluate and make these decisions, but because that pressure is going to be on who's up top. Brian Daboll didn't know he was being given this job before Brian Flores was being interviewed in all this.
Doesn't matter, Gojo. It doesn't matter. He's the guy that they chose over Brian Flores, and Brian Flores is coming off of back-to-back winning seasons, and also keep in mind, Brian Flores has head coach experience. Brian Daboll does not. He's been an offensive coordinator and a very successful one. He developed Josh Allen into a top five quarterback, elite by any measure. And so this is a situation now where you like the resume, but there's no way that you can argue that Brian Daboll is a more qualified candidate than Brian Flores. Now, Brian Daboll may very well prove to be a better fit than Brian Flores in terms of collaboration with the front office and ownership. But the process, the way that you went about hiring Brian Daboll, undermines the credibility of your entire coaching search. And so the only way you validate landing on Brian Daboll is him going out and in year one having success and being able to get this program turned around. And Gojo, that's a low bar to clear, seeing as how the Giants were 4-13 this past season. So if you can have a season, maybe you're talking about 6-11, you're talking about 7-10. Maybe that's enough to be able to say, okay, Brian Daboll was the right guy for the job, even though we don't like the process in which the Giants went about hiring him. But yeah, make no mistake about it, there have got to be some early returns on Brian Daboll in order to get rid of the stink that's coming out based on these allegations that Brian Flores has now put out there.
And it's unfortunate because Brian Daboll is by no means a victim in all of this, but at the same time, Chris, have
he
we
caught
gone,
up?
That's the crazy part, Chris, is have we gone through this process and Brian Flores had been interviewed and Brian Daboll had been interviewed and ultimately they decided, hey, we're going to go with Brian Daboll based on what he had done with Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. We probably wouldn't have batted an eye. They both seemed like very qualified candidates. They both seemed like people that could have done a good job leading the team. And we probably would have said, all right, you had those to choose from. You chose this one, and we would have gone on accordingly. That seems like the way we would have operated based on the reaction we largely saw from people that knew both names were involved in the process.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Gojo. You can't give NFL teams or the NFL as a whole the benefit of the doubt when it comes to race and their hiring practices. We've seen as much with the correspondence from the fallout with the Washington Commanders. Like, we understand that the NFL is not to be trusted when it comes to fair and equitable opportunities for diversity at the highest levels of the club or the highest levels of the league. And so even though the NFL is caping for social justice out in the community and with our society as a whole, they don't practice what they preach. And this is a prime example of it. So, yeah, I would want to believe in Brian Daboll being the very best candidate, but the lack of transparency in the process, and then the text message from Bill Belichick to Brian Flores thinking he was Brian Daboll only confirms the suspicions that everybody had, which is it's a sham process when it comes to the Rooney Rule and actually giving black coaching candidates a fair shake when it comes to being considered for these head coaching jobs.
That is certainly going to be a lot of what's at stake now. As you mentioned, this is just one of the teams caught up in all of this, the Giants having to deal with the fallout of this. We'll also get to the Dolphins in a little bit and what that job has become. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. With insurance for cars, homes, boats, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. By the way, the statement from Giants' new GM Joe Shane on the Brian Flores lawsuit and allegations that they hired Brian Daboll before Flores even interviewed, Joe Shane said, quote, "No, I can't comment on it. We had thorough coaching search, and Brian Flores was one of the finalists, and I'll just leave it at that." So that's the information we've gotten from them for the time being. I'm sure everyone's going to be pretty tight-lipped on this as everyone involved lawyers up and make sure they're not doing anything to harm their case in the public sphere. We will get to plenty more on that, as no doubt been the news of the day. But coming up next, the now artist formerly known as the Washington football team made an announcement today. I will laud Chris Canty for something he has already done within the body of this show next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And man, oh man, the day has really turned around in here. Raw feed a Senior Bowl practice on ESPN2 right now. Chris, we're watching
Hello.
Guys out here working D-line drills. We're talking hand size with quarterbacks. It is draft season, baby. I am psyched.
What is the most overrated attribute when it comes to all of these draft prospects? Is it hand size with the quarterbacks?
It's got to be that, right? Like, we had Joe Burrow openly taunting that during his pre-draft process. Kenny Pickett appears to be the target for everyone on the hand size. He elected not to have his hand size measured at the Senior Bowl. Going to opt for that at the Combine, I believe. Chris, I swear to God, I saw a report out there that it was because he is double-jointed with his thumbs or something crazy. Like the things that we do during this time period, because we don't have actual football on, are insane.
No, but here's the thing, though. You're electing to have your hand size measured at the Combine and not at the Senior Bowl.
Respect.
I mean, are your hands going to grow in that period of time? Are you Deadpool? Are you going to chop it off and let it grow back in hopes that it's bigger? I don't even understand. It just seems utterly ridiculous, man. The tape is your resume. The guy was a beast at Pittsburgh in his last year. No question about it. Led his team to a conference championship. I don't think Kenny Pickett has anything else to prove other than he's capable of making NFL throws when it comes to NFL caliber players, and that's what he's going to have around him this week down in Mobile, and he'll have that as well at the combine.
It is just so fascinating. So again, we'll start off right now with the quarterback class that everyone agrees is like late first rounders at best, and watch probably two of them get taken in the top 10 by the end of all of this.
I will say this though, Gojo.
Yeah.
Having small hands, not necessarily going to do wonders for you with your reputation in these streets. I'm just saying. Nobody wants to be friends with the guy that has small hands.
They're thick, though. It's fine here. Canny and Golic
Jr. He's got girthy hands.
Canny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Girthy hands down in Mobile right now. Up here, though, Chris, we have news on the NFL front. The artist now formerly known as the Washington Football Team. And I want to give you credit on this because we're talking to Amber Wilson, interviewing her in the first segment, talking about the impropriety going on in the NFL. And you referenced the emails leaked by the Washington Commanders, already on top of the name change, as they now officially unveil that today for the squad, Chris, and the tradition unlike any other. New team names, new logo, and new uniforms getting roasted on the internet mercilessly.
Yeah, here's the thing. I don't necessarily have a problem with the uniforms because the color scheme is what it is. And you see that they did the numbers up to kind of fit the Commanders' whole vibe. But the helmets, though, the black helmet with the W in the front.
In the front!
It just doesn't make sense. I don't get it. In our pre-show meeting, you referenced Wario, and that's essentially what it feels like. Like, everybody knows the NFL needs to have the logos on the sides of it. Having them on the front doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of the visibility and making it identifiable with your fan base and around the National Football League. So it just seems like a big question mark when it comes to who thought it was a good idea to put that logo on the front of the helmet. But then I have to remind myself, this is the Washington Football Team / the Washington Commanders that we're talking about, one of the most dysfunctional organizations in the National Football League, year in, year out.
Yeah, and there's no doubt at some point Daniel Snyder walked down into that meeting. They're like, you know, we put the logo on this. Now, you know what? Front of the helmet. Upside down Majin Washington Commanders. That's what we're going to go with.
We go kill him with this one, Gojo. We go kill. They ain't going to see it coming. We not going to put it on the side like everybody else. We going to put it on the front.
Because, you know, objectively, Commanders isn't like a bad. Like, all of this, Chris, is designed to be as unoffensive as possible. Considering
exactly.
Your old name was a literal racial slur, you thought, all right, going into this, let's be as unassuming and unoffensive as possible. This is why I will always, Chris, until my dying day, say that every department needs a disinterested, I used to say millennial, now I'll say disinterested Gen Z kid, just on TikTok, on his phone at the end of this, his or her phone. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the meeting, when you've been working hard on the idea, you put it in front of them and you say, all right, kid, we're going to put the W in the front of the helmet. And it's that kid's responsibility to say, oh, no, they're going to roast you for that online. This is a terrible idea. I've been waiting for someone to take me up on this, Chris. One day they'll listen.
Yeah, someday it's got to happen. But, Gojo, here's the thing. I'm glad that the Washington Commanders settled on a name. What I really want to know is, did Martin McCauley, the guy that was sitting on all of those names that were trademarked because he knew that the Redskins were going to have to change their name at some point, I'm just wondering, did he get broke off in this? Was the Commanders one of the names that he had trademarked? And if so, what does he get out of the deal? Because I'm pretty sure it had to be something more than just season tickets.
This is the new line of demarcation. Did he get paid more than the guy who just sold Wordle? Because that's all I need to know here. Low seven figures for the guy. Again, apparently his name was Wardle, who made the game Wordle, that just sold in the low seven figures to the New York Times. We got to know if this guy got paid for the Washington Commanders at least above that, because right now, Chris, that seems like the going rate.
Yeah, I mean, that's really all I wanted to know. I mean, not to mention the fact that Dan Snyder has a lot of egg on his face because he swore that he would never change the team name, and then he's pivoted and changed the team name twice in the last 3 years. But, I mean, I just want to know, did this guy get broke off?
Yeah, never forget back in 2013, the Daniel Snyder quote, I'll put it in all bold and caps, we will never change this name.
It was all cap, Gojo. That was all cap.
All cap. So welcome to the Washington Commanders here. For those of us that still observe the football team, kudos to you on this trying day here. At Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canny 99. feel free to roast the Washington football team, the now Washington Commanders, if you so please, on all of this. Tell us a better commander and one you enjoy more in your life. We can get to all that on the Twitter feed in a little bit. But coming up next, we got to get back to the Brian Flores lawsuit that once again shines a light on the NFL's poor hiring practices for head coaching vacancies. Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.